if you know the Devil's Advocates, but they are kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition. Dom, we welcome back a fine guest. He is Daniel Kaufman. He wrote recently at the New York Times. Didn't want to, you know, put you in a inferior paper. Dan, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. Thank you so much for coming around, sir.
Hey, Dan.
Thank you for having me. Always happy to be on.
Dan, the story you tell at the New York Times is about Scott Walker, and it happens here in the state of Wisconsin, and it starts about 10 years ago, and I just want to read the headline and then perhaps have you start telling the story, Dan. Scott Walker's Wisconsin paved the way for Donald Trump's America. So what did Walker do?
Well, Walker kind of relaunched a kind of long war on labor that had been going on for decades, and that caught fire. And I think that the article kind of describes how labor forms a kind of cohesive force in society at large, much beyond just and the decimation of labor, which has been going on long before Walker, and I do get into some of that. I would say that it's not just about Walker. In fact, it raises a lot of criticisms of the Democrats as well and their abandonment of labor in recent decades, going back to the 70s. But I think the point of the piece is that with the absence of labor, you get a much more of a fragmented society. A lot of the bitterness is more prevalent. The economic inequities are much more pronounced. And you have a kind of general unraveling of society, including our democracy, as you saw, you know, on January 6th and leading up to it before that, and a kind of unleashing of xenophobia and racism and so on. I don't think it's just the result of labor's disappearance, but I think that's a major culprit in it. And Wisconsin was obviously a test case, as most of your listeners know, and I'm sure you know, that Act 10 kind of reignited something that had been dormant for a little while, a war on organized labor. And it was very successful. And I think that resulted in Donald Trump's victory, certainly in Wisconsin and in Michigan. And it's not just me. Grover Norquist said something similar. I think, you know, unions play an outsized role in civil society education. They're a counterweight to the infrastructure that's on the right. So I think that's the general thesis of the article, and kind of goes through some recent history and some older history too, going back to Roosevelt and then up into the 70s when there was a kind of shift away from working class voters in the Democratic Party.
Dan, we've had some discussions today on air about sort of the resentment, the animus. Scott Walker was very good at pitting Wisconsinites against other Wisconsinites. He famously told a billionaire Republican donor, first you divide and then you conquer. And it starts with the public sector unions. Can you speak to the politics of resentment?
Sure. Yeah. And I think that was a really important and incredible telling moment. And just want to give a shout out to the filmmaker, Brad Lichtenstein, that caught that. This was a private event around at the home of Diane Hendricks, billionaire donor in Beloit. And Walker spoke very candidly about his effort. And, you know, I've written about this a lot, and I think there were some people, he was able to gin up resentment against public school teachers in particular. They were the main target of Act 10. He would praise the building trades. Definitely, you know, these are the good guys. And then, of course, a few years later, he signed a right to work law, betraying a promise not to do so. So I think he was very successful at fulfilling that promise, and amazing that comment didn't hurt him more. But I think divide and conquer is something that's been going on for a long time, you know, and there's racial forms of it, and there's definitely forms within labor, like, you know, and he was able to divide labor against itself. And the result is that Wisconsin has come to resemble a very typical Southern state. Like, as I mentioned in the article, the union density rate in Wisconsin is now about 8%. That's roughly the same as Alabama, a state that's never really been unionized much at all. And the South was always a kind of the centerpiece for the right to work movement, the kind of staging ground for it, because it preyed upon racial divides. And labor was one of the few successful forces in American society that could bridge some of those things. And you saw, you know, in the 60s, Martin Luther King was very closely aligned with the United Auto Workers. Walter Reuther was a big ally. And you saw a lot of progress then. I think labor was key to the civil rights movement. And you, there's studies that show that union members are less prone to racial resentment and other aspects that, that have come forth. And I think, you know, Walker did, in his own way, although he had a very different temperament, was a kind of proto-Trump figure. And he sold himself as a kind of right-wing populist, too. Like, he brought his own bag, brown bag to lunch, and he rode a Harley around. It was a different style than Trump, for sure. Trump was much more brazen. And ironically, Trump was very critical of Walker and Paul Ryan during the primary in Wisconsin. But that was always a kind of mirage. I mean, I remember going to a conference in 2016, in the summer of 2016, of the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a kind of model bill factory for corporate donors like the Kochs and others. And, you know, Mike Pence was there. He was the vice presidential nominee, and he was there along with Stephen Moore to reassure the participants that Trump was, in fact, one of them. And the whole kind of populist, you know, they shouldn't really worry about that. And in fact, but, you know, at the same time, I do want to say that the article talks about it and talk about it a lot in my book, that the Democrats left this opening for that kind of politics.
Yes.
They had also abandoned labor. So that's been going on for decades.
You know, Dan Kaufman, author of The Fall of Wisconsin, and contributor to the New York Times as well, wrote a piece yesterday entitled Scott Walker's Wisconsin Paved the Way for Donald Trump's America. And Dan, I guess I wanted to jump in at that point. You write in the piece of the New York Times yesterday, you mentioned that Barack Obama did not come to Wisconsin during the Act 10 protest, nor did his vice president at the time, Joe Biden, who, as you also mentioned, promised to be a big friend of labor. Dan, I mean, how important was that for Scott Walker to not have the president get involved? I mean, I think that was a big loss for the Democrats. In my mind, an opportunity lost. What do you think the end result was from that?
Yeah, I think it was fairly quite significant. You know, I really do. I think it showed Walker, and in fact, he boasted about that in his book, that Obama did not come. And it made it seem that labor was on its own. Whether or not it would have, you know, altered the outcome of the recall, I don't know. Walker had a lot of dark money supporting him. But I think in the long run, the signal was sent. And I think what it did was deflated any kind of enthusiasm for the Democrats. And you saw that definitely play out in 2016. You know, people have to remember that Donald Trump actually did marginally worse than Mitt Romney did. It's just that Hillary Clinton got so many fewer votes. And I think all of that played into it. You know, there was no sense that they were on the side, and Obama consciously distanced himself from that. And there's a reason for that. They also were very critical in their own way, to a lesser extent. Arne Duncan was Secretary of Education, and he was really critical of many of the aspects of the teachers union. And there was a sense that they were embracing this public austerity, the kind of mantra that we have no money for, you know, public infrastructure, schools, and these kinds of things, and teachers. They did it to a lesser extent, but it was the same kind of politics that opened the door. There was no questioning of the narrative, you know, and so I think the protesters were left on their own. And there was a lot of bitterness and frustration, I think, that came along with that abandonment that really affected them. And still, you know, it still makes people cynical around, you know, whether or not Biden will do anything different.
Well, that, Yeah, and I guess that's the question then, Dan. As you mentioned in your piece, Roosevelt signed the Wagner Act, 1935 bill, guaranteeing private sector workers the right to form unions and strike. A momentous time, very important time back then. What do you think the current president can do, given these observations we've talked about with the shrinking, union and labor and the divide and conquer strategies of the Republicans? What do you think Biden should do now?
Well, I mean, one thing that I suggest in the piece is like the filibuster is an impediment to basically doing anything. And he has, it's not up to him, but if he sent a clear signal that he was for abolishing it, that would be one thing. I think they just, there has been a shift. He definitely endorsed the unionization drive in Alabama around at the Amazon warehouse. But I think they need to prioritize labor rights. The whole thesis of my article was that, they're really central to democracy, lowercase d democracy, in the sense that a lot of these other problems are related to the decline of labor, is what I would say, in the sense like the power of ALEC to enact voting rights bills and these other organizations. I mean, there's very good reason that Walker and Ronald Reagan before him and all of the conservative industrialists before them went after labor. It really was and is the most effective counterweight to the right and to basically the interests of money. And I think, it has to be more centralized. And I still think they're viewing it as something we'll kind of pay lip service to and maybe pay rhetorical attention to and maybe make different personnel decisions. Certainly, there's been, firing the head of the NLRB was a really significant and symbolic act. But I think it has to be more prioritized. And I think there's a shift, definitely. And I think that shift is largely around the changing time. And I think, Les, I don't want to run on and on, but I think one thing that's underappreciated is that the Act 10 protest movement, while unsuccessful at stopping Act 10 and defeating Walker, was strangely successful in terms of igniting the progressive movement. It really was the first thing. It was before Occupy. It was before the Sanders 2016 campaign. It was the first mass politics rooted in a kind of traditional kind of left class politics in a long time. You had 100,000 people. And though it was defeated, I do think it sent a powerful message that the Democratic Party, and it gave an opening for people like Sanders and a kind of, and Occupy and other movements. And I think that movement has become big enough that it is pushing Biden and the Congress to talk about labor. And again, a lot of people besides myself have been pointing out that income inequality has gotten exponentially worse, exact correlation with the decline of labor. It doesn't, it's just obvious that
Dan,
the rich are getting richer.
I agree with your sentiment entirely. I read an article and we were inspired in no small part by the uprising in response to Act 10, this radio product. We've been around since 2012. And I read a stunning article in the New York Times back then about people's resentment of government when they are more dependent upon it and they're more likely to vote red. Dan, we got 1 minute left. Can you speak to that? Aren't the same bad policies making people poorer and making them more likely to vote red?
Sure. And that's the conundrum. And I think, and the power of the right-wing media to frame things in a way, and it is a race to the bottom. And it's easy to gin up resentment when you've lost a lot. And that is the challenge to counter with a message of universal inclusion and universal uplift, which is the kind of historical legacy of Wisconsin progressivism. Kind of we're all in it together and we're going to lift everyone up. And if you can do that, I think you can be challenged. So,
Daniel Kaufman, fine piece at the New York Times. We posted it at the Devil's Advocates Facebook page. Dan, thank you so much for coming around. Really appreciate it, sir. Very insightful.
Thanks, Dan.
It was a pleasure. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. Bye. Okay.
We're going to deal with collective bargaining for all public employee unions.
Right.
Because you divide and conquer.
My good friend, Governor Scott Walker.
Having a great time.